humble yourself before your mother. You've got to bend down low, humble yourself before your mother. You've got to know what she knows, and we can lift each other up. Higher and higher we can lift each other up. Higher and higher, humble yourself before your sister. You've got to bend down low, humble yourself before your sister. You've got to know what she knows, and we can lift each other up. Higher and higher we can lift each other up. Humble yourself before your daughter. You've got to bend down low, humble yourself before your daughter. You've got to know what she knows, and we can lift each other up. Higher and higher we can lift each other up. Humble yourself before your family. You've got to bend down low, humble yourself before your family. You've got to know what they know, and we can lift each other up. Higher and higher we can lift each other up. Humble yourself before the ancestors. You've got to bend down low, humble yourself before the ancestors. We've got to know what they know. Yes, we can lift each other up. Higher and higher we can lift each other up. Higher and higher we can lift each other up. Higher and higher we can lift each other up. Humble yourself before your community. You've got to bend down low, humble yourself before your community. We've got to know what we know. Yes, we can lift each other up. Higher and higher we can lift each other up. Higher and higher we can lift each other up. Higher and higher we can lift each other up. Can lift each other up. Let's lift each other up.
Hello and welcome to the Womb Centered Healing Podcast. I am Sama Morningstar and I'm here with Tiffany. Thank you so much for joining me for an interview on the podcast, Tiffany. I'd love for you to introduce yourself and share with us about what womb-centered healing means to you, both professionally and personally.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me. I'm Tiffany, a doula from Birmingham, Alabama. I do have a doula, well, maternal service, I'll say. Mothering the Mother is spelled M-U-V-A, though. Womb healing, to me, professionally and personally, it's kind of the same thing, because I'm doing the work that I'm doing because I was inspired personally. So womb healing is just Healing yourself, I would say, from the deepest part of your being, really. I think that that's what the womb is. I know that the womb holds a lot of trauma, and not just, you know, sexual trauma, trauma from everything that you go through. So it's very important to focus on your innermost being while healing, and healing has been a very important aspect of my life the past few years. So, yeah, I hope I answered the question.
Yeah, lovely. So in your doula services, do you support women sometimes with trauma healing in preparation for childbirth?
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Because people don't realize that when you do get pregnant and have to, you know, go through all the prenatal appointments and, you know, have people touching you and things like that, that can bring back a lot of memories and traumatic experiences. So I do definitely assist women, you know, in that area quite frequently.
Uh-huh. And so how do you help them if one of your doula clients says to you, oh my gosh, I just went to this doctor appointment and now I'm freaking out because the way they touch me, the doctor reminds me of so-and-so. Oh, you know, can you share with, you know, without breaching anyone's confidentiality, can you share some anecdotes from your practice about how you support clients like that?
Well, I definitely am big on consent. So I do tell people that you have the right to say what you do and you don't consent to. And if anyone does not respect that, then you have the right to get another doctor. I'm pro-fire your doctor. Anything that they do or don't respect that you are asking, they can be let go. Especially if it's in a case that, like you said, they remind you of someone or they just were too rough and did not expect or respect the fact that you said, hey, maybe I need to come back or maybe you should slow down. You know, I'm always big on advocating for yourself in that area and just doing what is comfortable for you. And I feel like if a provider is good, then they respect that.
So. Beautiful. And so... So do you usually sort of coach your clients on this? I mean, do they know when you sit down with a doula client to begin with, do you have part of your agreement that they can call you before and after doctor's appointments or in between and get your support with navigating their medical care?
Oh, for sure. I'm available not only for trauma, but for anything. And they know that they can always call. But if it's something special with a trauma case or anything, you know, we discuss that and we can coach, you know, ahead of time. You know, if the doctor says we need to do a pap smear at your initial appointment, these are the ways that you can prepare yourself. Or if you just really don't want to do it, then these are the things that you can say to get out of it because nothing is required. You know, you have the option to say no. So I do kind of lead them in that direction. Of course, I tell people if something is medically necessary, then it's best to do it. You can make your choice. But for those unmedically necessary things that can bring back those memories, you know, just kind of pre-navigating how we're going to either decline or go forward with it ahead of time so that she can be prepared and, you know, not caught off guard.
Mm-hmm. So I imagine you do quite a bit of education about what truly could be medically necessary and what could be not really medically necessary that might be different than what the nurse or the doctor or the nurse practitioner or the OBGYN is telling you.
Right. I don't like to... Well, with my clients, I don't like to come out and just say this is not medically necessary because I don't want to go outside of the doula scope. Right. But I tell people, you know, hey, research this so you can see how important it is to really have it done.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads people down the road to see, okay, maybe this is not really necessary or as big of a deal as the doctor makes it seem because everything is a big deal to them.
Right.
But not really.
And I know in my doula training, one of the things to address that without, you know, going out of the scope, the doula scope of practice, right? Because the doula, we're not supposed to be determining what's medically necessary. Right. We're a team member, but we can help a woman advocate for knowing all the information for herself, right? So I remember in my training, we had a list of questions that we could pre-prepare our clients with when they're going into their doctor's appointments, when they might be told that something needs to happen, or even during the birth process, if, mm-hmm. you know, if they're dealing with new practitioners that aren't familiar with their birth plan, or an eventuality of something that's happening and the doctors and the nurses are saying, we have to do this, that we, the doulas, can even help by reminding, if they're there in person, the mothers and the birth partners, the family birth partners, about the questions to ask medical practitioners that give more spaciousness for that research to even go on, to learn more about it, and to ask the doctors even to tell more information about it, you know, like questions to ask to give space for that are like, what would happen? What are the risks if we wait on this decision? Right. Yes. And what, you know, what are some other options besides, what are my other options besides this procedure?
Right. I like to use the BRAIN acronym, which is basically what you say: benefits, risk, alternatives. What does your intuition say? And what will happen if we do nothing? And that's kind of what
BRAIN, I that's right. I remember that it was spelled out like that. You're good. That helps to remember the BRAIN acronym. Beautiful. And so you can give that to your clients, even on a slip of paper, having a clever acronym like that helps them remember, so that when they go into a doctor's office and the doctor's being all, you have to do this because this is how it's done, they can say, well, what are the benefits?
Right.
What are the risks? They can go down the BRAIN thing, right? Yes. Especially with people who've had trauma, you know, say childhood abuse, for example, right? Mm-hmm. That authoritative doctorly or nursely personality of just saying, you just have to do what I'm telling you to do, can be sort of triggering of the trauma responses. Right.
For sure.
Which even just that attitude, whether they're touching you or not.
For sure.
And it can be, you know, so have you ever had clients ask you to go with them to doctor visits to assist them and like hold their hand through the process?
I've never personally had anyone to ask me to go with them in that case, but I do like to, as much as possible, go to prenatal appointments, or at least one, just so I can get a feel of the doctor and they can know who I am, just so it won't be an issue, especially in a delivery room, because for some reason, some doctors just don't do doulas. So it's good to just meet them ahead of time and be there for your client, just to make sure that they know this is going to be a great working relationship, or sometimes it isn't. So, you know, they can make that decision. Mm-hmm. But I haven't personally had to go with anyone due to trauma, but I do it.
Mm-hmm. Right. You'd be available for it if, mm-hmm. if someone knew.
If the need arise, yes, I would.
But, you know, and I've heard and read about like lawyer doulas that will accompany, knowing a woman's legal rights, you know, and having the credential of being a lawyer, right? Oh my God. And going in as a doula with a lawyer credential with women who have history of sexual trauma or childhood sexual abuse, because the woman's had such intensive needs about not wanting to be re-traumatized again at her second birth.
Right.
Having the lawyer there giving a bit more oomph to her requests, right? With who came in and communicated her needs for physical space, for respect of her physical space, for respect of her consent of the entire birth team, with with the lawyer credential stamping it with finality there, you know, like my client needs this. This is what she needs to have a healthy birth experience. And I'm her lawyer and I'm here to make sure she gets what she needs, you know, that took it even another step. I liked the sound of that. Because it's true, as doulas, doctors somehow feel that a doula's work is dismissible sometimes, and nurses feel that way too. Have you had that experience? I'm sure you have. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, actually, I have not, thankfully. We do have a local hospital here that some do not go into because they all have that attitude, and you have to sign a paper when you get in there, like, this is what a doula cannot do, and it's basically nothing. So a few of my colleagues have had those issues, but luckily I have not had to deal with that yet. But I'm fairly new to this as well, so I'm not going to say that it won't happen, but hopefully not.
Right. Well, and if you've got the fire your doctor policy, and you're and a client really wants to work with you, and she tries to take you to her prenatal visit, and the doctor's telling her no, you know where that's going. You know. So, how many clients have you had that ended up firing their doctor because of the doctor's behavior and you helping them to realize that?
Well, one, but I don't think that it was so much of, well, it kind of was going into a VBAC and they weren't as supportive. And I told her, you know, you want someone VBAC supportive, not tolerant. And she did make the decision to change because she knew that this was something that was very important to her, and if she wanted to do it, she needed to have support, not only doula support, that's important, but also her provider needed to be on board as well.
Right. And so just for listeners who might not know what a VBAC is, it's a vaginal birth after cesarean birth, and there's a lot of controversy in the medical community. Some doctors and nurses think that that's completely impossible to do that, that once you've had a cesarean birth, every birth you have subsequently needs to also be cesarean. And there are many doctors and midwives and nurses that say, well, that's just not true. Women can definitely have vaginal births after a cesarean. And so, and that are really supportive in helping women who want that. And so having a doctor that's just going, okay, yeah, I'll go, sure, you can do that, but really, they're not really that supportive of it, makes all the difference in the world, because they're going to be looking for, that doctor is going to be looking for a way to just say, you know what, let's just go for the cesarean, because they're not really, whereas the doctor who's really supportive of that is going to look for all the options that will help you keep going in the direction of the VBAC. And so, so that's great that you really encouraged her to find a doctor that was 100% supportive and not just, you know, beautiful. So what I would really love to hear about more about your personal journey of how you got into doula work and womb-centered healing.
Well, I've always been a birth nerd before I even knew. Young, watching the baby story on TLC. But I always knew that I did not want to be a nurse or a doctor. So, you know, I would research here and there, but it was nothing that I had really found that I could do in that area. But again, you know, I was still interested in birth, always. It wasn't until I had my daughter, got pregnant with my daughter in 2017, that I really learned what a doula was and what they do. So I had a doula present for my daughter's birth, and she was great and really helped me through the process. And I was like, okay, this is something that I can really do for other women. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I got started being a doula. Womb-centered healing. My process with that has been, it's been interesting. I really started to start working on focusing on healing, which I guess you could say is womb-centered healing, because I know that it all starts from within, about a year ago. Again, starting with my daughter. She started everything for me, and her name is Nilaya. It's G-N-I-L-A-E-H, which is healing spelled backwards.
I'll look at that.
Yes, and she has been very vital in my journey, not only professionally, but personally with the healing. Her father died when I was pregnant, so that was a very traumatic experience for me. And that's why a doula was important for me. And that's what made me feel like I needed to do this for other women. Their circumstances might not be as traumatic as mine were, but everybody needs the support. So that's why it's Mothering the Mother Maternal Services and not birth services, because I'm interested in birth, but I want to be there beyond and support women through the journey of motherhood. But back to healing. So healing for me, my journey with that has been, I'm actually trying to get into yoga and things like that, but I'm very focused on chakras and things like that. I believe in all of that. And that's what I focus on daily as a part of my healing, therapy as well. But in being a mom, my daughter, she's amazing. And I think that she's everything that I've needed in life. And her name, just being her name, kind of, when I named her that, it was given to me way before she was conceived, and I didn't understand until she got here. So I think that that was very vital to push me to get to where I need to be healing-wise, so that I can be who I'm supposed to be.
Beautiful. So it sounds like you really had some firsthand experience of the effects that trauma can have on a pregnant mother. Oh, and nice. I'm hoping, and I'd love to hear about your doula and what made her sensitive. You know, what did she bring that addressed those particular needs of yours, of the trauma, your recent trauma of the father of your baby dying? How did she help you with that in your birth process?
Well, she helped me, number one, by being there and listening to me and giving me tools that I needed to, number one, take care of myself, because that was important. And it's very hard to be pregnant and grieving. So she definitely gave me those tools that I needed to have a healthy child after it's all said and done. And she was just able to be there for me. I can't say in a way that he would have been, but I felt more comfortable in the situation with him being gone, knowing that I had someone that was there that's not, you know, mom or, well, my mom or, you know, somebody like that. So I definitely think that she was great in that area too. And it wasn't her trying to overcompensate and be something that she knew she couldn't, but she was able to be what I needed her to be in those moments. I had 4 days of prodromal labor, and she supported me through that. When I, without a doula, I know that I would have went through that alone, and it was tough. So she was definitely vital in that aspect, as far as being supportive in the hospital, because, you know, you can have your mom there and things like that, but I tell people, your family support, they aren't trained to give you the support that a birth worker can and will. So she was able to give me something that my mom and his mom not necessarily couldn't, but did not know how to do. So she was very vital in the hospital as well.
Can you give some specific examples of things that she knew to do and maybe that you know to do that are over and above what family or friend support might have available?
Well, number one, massage techniques, getting me things to eat. Because, you know, the doctor says, oh, you can't eat in labor and things like that. But you need that energy, and we know. So she was able to do that for me.
Whereas your family members might just be listening to what the doctor says and parroting it back to you. Yes.
And when I was in labor, I was stuck at like 5 centimeters for a while. And she was able to give me some of those birthing positions and, well, not birthing positions, but laboring positions that can kind of get me progressed and, you know, introduce me to the peanut ball, which back then I had no idea of anything that I know now. So it was kind of new to me, different positions and things like that. So she helped me in that area. Hey, and, you know, just giving me things we can do. Hey, we can go in the shower, you know, things that people wouldn't necessarily know. They think that you just have to lay in the bed and be miserable. Because I had prodromal labor for 4 days, I was exhausted. I went in with the mind that I wanted to have an unmedicated birth, but it ended up not going that way because I just, you know, was tired.
For four days, I'd say.
Yeah. So finally, I gave in and got an epidural, but I appreciated her in that aspect because I know some doulas can be so stuck on, well, your birth plan says, and, you know you wanted this. She never hounded me about anything that I committed to because it's just a plan. And if things change and you need to do this for you, then it's okay. And she was very good in that aspect because she explained to me, you know, it's okay. You didn't fail. You know, you just did what you needed to do to get this baby out, which is the plan. So she was great in that area. And she stayed with me postpartum, of course, for those first 2 hours until they moved us upstairs to the postpartum room. So she was great there, taking pictures, you know, just all the things that maybe he would have done because my mom, she was with me, so she wasn't able to do all of those things. So she was just very important to me in those moments because I was, you know, lacking in that area.
And so she helped you before the birth with navigating your grieving process as well, as while you were preparing for birth, which I can imagine for someone who didn't have a doula, you know, and just had family, oftentimes families are just as inept at supporting someone through grieving, and friends can be inept. We, you know, our culture doesn't teach us about healthy grieving process. We don't have any healthy cultural grieving systems in place anymore in our cultures. And so, you know, this idea that we're supposed to rely on family and friends for that sort of thing, it just doesn't work anymore. Now, I just interviewed a doula in India where she was telling me she's probably the last generation where these types of family cultural things are in place. Like right now, she was telling me that in most communities in India, the family does a really good postpartum support for mothers. It's built into the cultural system there that the mother, when she goes to her mother's house, and when she's preparing to give birth, the mother takes care of her, takes her to the hospital, brings her home, and then feeds her the right food. She said, you can tell a mile away, she said a mile or a half mile or something, when there's a woman who's just given birth from the smell from the kitchen, of all the different specific spices and herbs and foods that are being prepared for the 40 days after the woman gives birth. But that tradition built into the culture is changing as the culture is influenced by more people wanting to be more like Western culture, which I'm like, no, tell them it's not all it's cracked up to be. Nope. Really, it is not all it's cracked up to be. And so we really do have to rely on somebody who's actually said, wait a second, this, our whole approach to grieving isn't getting us anywhere. Let's figure this out, right? And so there have been people who have resurrected and reclaimed cultural grieving practices and researched what really helps people through the grieving process. And so it sounds like your doula might have been able to bring you some information or some referrals of professionals to work with and support you in that way. Am I right about that?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. Because it can be really confusing to be grieving and having to get on with what's going on in your life at the same time, right? And our cultural training is to just not grieve, right? Just ignore your feelings and get on with what's going on in your life. And that produces all kinds of problems physically, emotionally, for our ongoing health. I mean, that's oftentimes what creates disease as we continue yes. to stuff down all of those feelings. Do you feel that you had enough support with your grieving process? Or are you still working through that? Sometimes that kind of grieving can take a long time.
Oh, definitely still working. I've been in therapy going on 2 years in April. So still working daily. I think that it takes a while. Uh-huh. Of course, I'm not where I was, but you know, I've come a long way. But you know, daily is a work, and you know, just focusing to stay on the path to healing and not just, you know, go back to depression and things like that. I think grieving is healthy. People, you know, when you hear that word, it's like a black cloud over it, like, oh, grief is depression and all of that. I think that it's healthy, and it comes in waves. Sometimes you're good, sometimes you're not, but it's great to just always be in tune with every emotion, feel it, let it be a moment, and move on. And I think that that's where I am in my process right now. Most days are good. When I have a bad one, I don't call it a bad day, though. It's a bad moment. I get it out, I address it, and then I go forward with the rest of the day. I don't let it get me down as I did in the beginning. It's a work.
Right. And so has your experience with that inspired you to do any kind of additional training around supporting others with the grieving process?
Yes. That's long term. That's eventually what I do aspire to do. Mm-hmm. Help others through the process, and not just moms, but people in general, because you made a very valid point earlier that we just, for some reason, don't like to address it. And it does come out in other issues. People think that, oh, well, I'm just going to bury it and be okay. But that's when you get that generational trauma from you not dealing with what happened to you and you're passing it on. Because, you know, trauma is embedded in your DNA. I'm convinced. So, you know, that brings that generational trauma. And like you said, those diseases and things like that. So that is something that I'm very passionate about, you know, just teaching people that it is okay. And you do have support because, as you said, it's not family and friends, you know, they don't know what to say or do as much as they like to, you know, or they just stay away because it's just, I don't know what to say, or I don't want to say the wrong thing, so I'm just not going to show up at all. So people do need that outside support and, you know, just to vent to without feeling any guilt or feeling like, oh, somebody's going to tell somebody I said that. So. Yeah, I do want to do that.
Beautiful. So I'd love for you to say a little bit more about trauma can be embedded in your DNA and that you're convinced. It sounds to me like you have personal experience of that. Is that from having this trauma of your baby's dad dying and then feeling how you don't want to pass that on? You want to take responsibility for that so you're not passing that on to your child. I'm imagining if you've had that. But did you also have a feeling like at some point in your recovery process, have you had the feeling of like, wow, did I inherit this from my ancestral lineage?
Oh, for sure. I wouldn't say necessarily from this situation, mm-hmm. but just in general speaking, I know that things have been embedded in my DNA. I think we all have things that, you know, if our parents have not healed from, then that affects us, and it's not always in a positive way. Mm-hmm. I was reading something, well, no, actually watching a video, I can't remember where, but it showed like how your DNA is altered every time you go through an experience, whether good or bad. You know, your DNA is what's passed on, you know, down the line. That's why people say don't cry it out. Your baby is, his or her DNA is changing every time they feel like, oh, I can't trust mom because she's going to let me just cry. Mm-hmm. So.
Makes me want to cry just hearing you say that.
But I do think that, you know, DNA is changed every time you go through something. And that's why they say, you know, the woman who heals herself heals her whole matriarch line, because, you know, you're healing your family that has left and your family that's here and the family that's to come. And I think that that's something that I'm truly focused on, healing my bloodline and making sure that my daughter does not have to do it. And I know that we all have things to heal from, but her trauma won't be anything from me, you know. So I work very hard to face and deal with every issue, rather than just passing it along for her to do the work.
Mm-hmm. And well, first I want to tell a little bit story about my experience with that, and then I have a question for you about that, because this has been a big focus in my work. So it's great to be able to have this conversation with you about it. I had a recent really big trauma, which was my community basically burned down in the wildfires in California and about 3 years ago. And this is a community that I feel very close with. It's a place where I work, but it was also a community, a spiritual sanctuary, a temple. And so there's a very intimate relationship I have with the land and with nature here. And then to have nature do this wild thing and destroy everything, it was like, it's like, I can't trust mom, right? Just like you were saying with that crying baby. And in that process of healing from that trauma, I've gotten really familiar with my own traumas that have been passed down that I'd been working on for some time, but the fire happened and I got really into the womb-centered healing, which very much lights up this, because it's also a medicine for this lineage of trauma that gets passed down, right? Mm-hmm. And so a really striking example of how it gets passed down and how we can heal and transform is that there's this thing with the throat and the thyroid and you talked about chakras before. So our throat chakra is about, surprise, surprise, our ability to communicate.
Right.
It's very much connected with the womb. You know, we have two cervixes. This is our cervical spine. And then we have the cervix in the womb, right? And if you look at pictures of the vocal cords, it looks very much like a vaginal opening, right? So there's this, you know, this upper mouth, and then we have our lower mouth, right? And so there's a very big connection between our feminine core and our voice. Right. And as we all know, historically speaking, women's voices have been violently suppressed for a very long time, and we're getting sick of it, right?
For sure.
It's time to speak up, right? And so it doesn't even have to be a violent suppression. It can be a very subtle suppression. Mm-hmm. and supported by society saying, you better keep quiet or you're going to lose all the power that you've managed to gain by allying yourself with this man.
Right.
Even if he's abusing you, you better shut up about it, because, you know, that whole thing. And so that goes back generations in my family. And my great-grandmother died of goiter, which is the swelling of the thyroid gland that eventually closes off your ability to breathe. And she had to have a tracheotomy, which is where they cut a hole in the throat so she could breathe below the swollen thyroid, right? But it eventually knocks you out, right? And so I, as a child, was witnessing my mother in this same kind of relationship with my stepdad, where she didn't really have a voice or any power, and she would suppress her real feelings and wouldn't express them vocally because she was, you know, there are verses in the Bible that tell women to submit to their husbands, and perpetuates, you know, abusive relationship. So, and I'm watching this as a child growing up, and I'm having recurrent nightmares of cutting a hole in my mother's throat with a knife to help her as a child. And so that memory of that was passed down from my grandmother, my great-grandmother. But it was also enforced by witnessing what went on in my family as I was growing up. And, you know, different aspects of it, which I could go on and on about all day long, because I've really taken it in as a study of, wow, where did this come from? And then it's also a big part of my recovery process of, I use the voice, my voice, and encourage my clients a lot to use their voice in that in whatever emotional process that is forbidden in our culture. Because emotional expression is a very feminine thing, and it's very powerful, and there's a lot of wisdom to it, and it's an important part of trauma recovery, right? And using our voices to do that on a regular basis gets us back to our more primal animal nature that's a lot healthier than this idea of what we're supposed to be as humans that's killing us. So anyway, I just had to share my little story and my little diatribe about it, but just that that memory, you know, showed up as these recurring dreams of mine, and there it was combined with this experience of my mother having no voice or not having her voice heard or listened to or honored or respected. And so and then how that translated into me developing vocally oriented practices that helped me with my trauma recovery. And so I'm curious to know what specific healing processes or practices you've discovered that help you the most with these, and that help your clients the most, if you've even started sharing them with clients, that help you with these ancestral trauma recovery things that you might have discovered, as well as anything that's, you know, happened recently that you're recovering from. What are your favorite trauma recovery practices, healing practices that you can do on your own? I know we go see our therapist, talking about it, getting it off our chest, but what's the homework your therapist sends you home with that you do on your own?
My biggest thing, which has always been my thing, is journaling.
Journaling.
Right. Right. That has always been something, even before I knew how therapeutic it could be, that's always something I have been able to do and love doing. And like you said, talking about it, sometimes you just need to talk about it, and that's all you need, or sharing. You know, I use my social media platforms to share not only birth work, but, you know, just general self-love, healing, little tidbits, because I know how important it is for yourself to be 100%. So I would say journaling first and foremost, because some people don't like to talk, but if you're a talker, you know, talk to someone, or just talk, you know. Sometimes I'm driving in my car and I'm on voice memos, you know, and I'm just talking to myself, but I guess that could be like what I would be journaling if I could in the moment. But when you can't, you know, talk to yourself. And I think those would be the two major things.
Then do you go back? Well, I want to hear the other ones, but I want to go ask if you go back and reread journal entries or listen to those audio recordings.
I do, but not frequently. I'll go back every once in a while and read things from years later. Mm-hmm. And it's a great thing because it puts things into perspective. Mm-hmm. Because sure. You're like, I thought I wouldn't survive, and here we are 4 years later. Mm-hmm. So I don't make it a practice to do it all the time. Mm-hmm. But when I do do it, I don't go back and read, you know, what I wrote 2 months ago. I'll go back to like a year or so, and I just use that as the motivation to continue on the path that I'm on.
Mm-hmm. And do you use any particular journaling prompts for yourself to get you started writing?
Not really. I've never been, well, now that I am in therapy, she'll give me some topics to write on. But when uh-huh. I used to just write for myself, no prompts, I would just write what was on my mind mm-hmm. and go from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I like both methods though.
When you shared about looking back 4 years down the line at your journaling, it reminds me of a practice I wonder if you've ever done where you imagine that you're your future self writing a note to yourself in your circumstance that you're in now. And you write a supportive note to yourself from your future self that's already gotten through to the other side of whatever you're going through. Have you ever tried that?
I have not.
Well,
something. Yeah.
It's a good one. It's a really good one. I think I got that. I did that one. It was my massage teacher that had us do that, I think. And that's she had nice. Us write to ourselves from the future at a certain
I've point. Heard of, you know, writing to your past self, but I've never done it because I'm like, well, it's over now.
Right.
But
right.
The future is, that's a great one to do though.
Well, although writing to your past self sounds very similar to some of the visionary journeying work that I do for with my clients and with myself for going back and healing past traumas. So,
yeah, yeah.
You know, we can imagine, take it even farther than just writing to our past self, although the writing could be a helpful tool. We could mm-hmm. actually go visit our past self or an ancestor as the guardian angel, right? We're safe. We've recovered enough to realize that that was a big deal and to go. And so I know that when I've been in circumstances, I call out for help and I feel, you know, helped when I call out for help. Even if there's no physical person there, you know, I feel help from the spirit realms. Yes. And since I've started developing this, visionary, or some might call it shamanic work. My teachers call it shamanic work. I know that term is quite controversial, but since I've been doing this kind of recovery work and traveling back in time like that, I realize, oh, that was my future self showing up to help me, right? As my wow. guardian angel.
Wow.
You know, and to realize that, you know, if we really look into metaphysics, mm-hmm. a lot of people say that time doesn't really exist. It's just an illusion. Yeah. The past, present, and future is all happening simultaneously. Mm-hmm. Then me sitting here writing a letter to my past self, it's actually yeah. there. You yeah. know, I mean, that might be the moment that you realized, oh, really, it is going to be okay. Okay. And got you through to the next moment when you thought you were going to die a few moments ago is because yeah. your future self, right? You know, was like, that's when it was delivered, you know?
that's a great perspective.
Yeah. And so you were going to start talking about meditation as well and some other practices that you do besides journaling.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say meditation was my last one, and I don't practice it as much as I should, mm-hmm. but it's something that I really love to do, and I think that it's very beneficial, you know, to not only for healing, but just in general practice, because we all need those moments to just clear your mind, especially in this world, and just, you know, declutter your brain. And move forward. So yeah.
So,
meditation.
What type of meditation do you like to do?
Well, lately I've been just lighting my candles with my crystals and doing what you see on the TV, just sitting on the floor and just really clearing my mind for as long as I can with the baby. But
sure.
But yeah, I do try to do that.
And so I'm curious, and because I hear this a lot when I ask my massage clients or my yoga students, you know, do you practice yoga or meditation? Very frequently I hear, not as much as I should. And so I'm really curious about that. Is there an amount that you think is that somebody has told you or that you've read about that is like the minimum or the ideal amount of meditation?
No one has told me. With me personally, my goal for myself would be to do it every day, starting off. I want to get up to twice a day, but every day initially, and I do a few times a week. So it's nothing that anybody's told me. It's just a personal, I guess, personal goal that I want to eventually get up to.
Mm-hmm. And when you achieve that personal goal, what do you imagine the benefits of that would be?
I think that I would be a lot more centered. That's the only word I can think about. But and I would have a lot more direction. And it would definitely help me with my discipline. I'm working very hard on self-discipline. So being able to do that every day for a set amount of time or whatever, it maybe will kind of help me with my self-discipline as well. So mm-hmm. I think that's how I would be fulfilled when I got there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Yeah. And that idea of discipline too is, that's quite an idea. You know, and one of my teachers talked about there's two types of discipline. One is the discipline of the mind, mm-hmm. and one is the discipline of the heart. Now, I would change it a little bit and say that there's the sort of more masculine, logical, linear discipline. Right, which says things like you have to do something every day, mm-hmm. right? That you have to do it or else you're not going to get the benefits. And then there's the more feminine discipline that says that we go in cycles.
Okay.
That there's a rhythm that's a natural rhythm, and that different times of the month, different times of our lives and different times of the seasons require different things. Mm. So doing something every day the same way doesn't always work. What I've discovered and I learned to realize for myself, because I'm like you, I'm like, forget this doing something every day thing. I've tried for years to do various practices every day. Because I'm trying, and when I learned that, wait a second, there's a different kind of discipline that's natural and intrinsic to who I am in a woman's body, that I'm going to naturally want to do certain types of practices at certain mm-hmm. times of the month and other types of practices at other types of the month. And that if I follow that guidance, womb guidance about the kinds of practices that are going to be beneficial to me at different times of our lives mm-hmm. as well, then, you know, then that sort of, for me, it gives me a big sigh of relief, because I'm not, you know, I'm really no good at this everyday thing. I'm 40 right. now, and it's like I've been trying for the everyday thing for a couple of decades, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You know, and so now moving towards menopause and really having made a study of these feminine rhythms and the cyclical nature, and that it's okay for our spiritual practices and our personal growth practices. In fact, it's preferable and better for us in women's bodies to have cyclical practices that and inner intuition guided practices of what's right for me today. What do I need today? That's really, then I'm like, oh, phew. I'm not a failure. It's just like when you needed your epidural, you're not a failure. So if I can impart any of that, like, oh, and not that we don't still, I still do. When I get up in the morning and I know that it would be good for me to go do, I do dance meditation and sound meditations to help with my process. So I put on music or I chant and I dance and I move and mix that with yoga. And I tell you, I will, come up with any all kinds of good reasons why I'm not going to do that today. So there's still, there is a quality of, okay, but do I really do need to do this today, and feeling that for myself whilst not putting myself down if I don't end up doing it, So it's quite a practice.
It is.
Yeah.
So, interesting. I'm glad you shared that.
Yeah. And so do you share about journaling and meditation with your doula clients at all?
Not so much, but I probably will now.
Right. And what do you plan? You said your long-term goal is to work more towards being able to support people more with trauma. What are some of your goals around that? Are you planning on going to any particular trainings?
None in the near future in that aspect. None in the near future, but I'm still researching on what's available out there in that arena. Mm-hmm. So hopefully soon. Mm-hmm.
Any promising possibilities coming up out of your research? No.
Not this far.
Uh-huh. I mean, because you probably know what kind of training your therapist did, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, well, honestly, I have been thinking about going to school to get my master's and going that route because I'm a psychologist. I have a psychology degree.
Right, me too.
So I'm already halfway there. Uh-huh. I thought about taking that route and just going ahead and getting my master's and going that route mm-hmm. first and see where it leads me.
Uh-huh. That might be smart. I might have done that earlier. At this point, though, in California, you need, even after you get your master's, in order to become a practicing therapist, you need to do 3,000 practice hours.
I was reading that last night, and I was like, how? But yes, I did see that yesterday.
As a massage therapist, I've been a massage therapist for over 20 years, and I still don't think I've done 3,000 hours of massage, and I'm considered a seasoned, experienced, highly skilled massage therapist.
Yeah, that's a whole lot. But I didn't know if that was a requirement for everybody, but I'm going to look more into it.
Look into that for your state, because it's different for different states. That's a California requirement. And I was like, I'm supposed to pay, what I want to study is very cutting edge, psychology and what that you find at accredited universities is only just beginning to include techniques that actually work for trauma. Mm-hmm. The book on that has only been published in 2016 saying that the talk therapies and the drug therapies don't actually work for trauma recovery. And what really works is yoga and these other more somatic body oriented therapies that teach you how to release the trauma from the cells in your body. Right. Whereas the talk therapy just re-stimulates the trauma and re-fortifies it as running your life sometimes. I mean, it can be helpful to depending on some, if you're working out strategies about how to move forward in your life, but actually recovering from that physiological, stimulus response trauma pattern that we get stuck in PTSD, mm-hmm. for example, where every time you hear a certain noise or every time someone says a certain set of words, right. suddenly you're in trauma response mode, which is what's so disruptive in our lives, right? Actually right. healing that right. doesn't really get helped by talk therapy, because every time you talk about it or think about right. it, it's the same thing gets fortified, right? And so the research is out now. Trauma specialists are saying, no, that doesn't help. But the training programs are only in the fanciest private schools that mm-hmm. I've discovered. And they charge you an arm and a leg and your head, really, mm-hmm. for that. And then you're supposed to do 3,000 hours of practice sessions. Maybe you're paid, maybe you're not. I'm like,
9 times out of 10, not.
So how are we supposed to do that? So I've been looking into other modalities, like, for example, the shamanic work, the womb healing work. So gotcha. I've done 2 years of an apprenticeship with that. Because the womb and the connection of the womb and the ancestral lineage is so direct.
Oh, yes.
The womb has this genetic, transformation capacity. I mean, you can right. grow a baby inside the womb. So mm-hmm. energetically, what else can we grow? What else can we transform by activating that womb wisdom? So yes. as a doula, that might be inspiring for you to explore that more.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Beautiful. Wonderful. Well, I'd love to, do you have a way that people can get in touch with you if they're listening into this?
Yes, Facebook would probably be the best. Okay. And it's Facebook. Well, of course it's on Facebook, but my page is Mothering the Mother, and it's MOTHERINGTHEMUVA, and it's a business page, but it's also connected to my personal, so you can always find me there.
Okay, great. That's how I think I found you. I sent you a message through your page. Beautiful. Yeah. So thank you so much for joining us today and sharing so candidly about your experience and your service. And it's really beautiful. I'm super honored to be able to support you as a doula and as a woman. And I hold a vision for your long-term vision of being able to support more women with their trauma and enabling them to have healthier birth outcomes and healthier lives, and anyone else, women, men, children, whomever you choose to support. So I just gather all of the energy of our womb-centered healing temple to hold your vision for you and thank your service. So thank you so much for joining us. And anyone listening in who would like to learn more about the Womb-Centered Healing Temple that I just mentioned, that's the online organization that is sponsoring this podcast. And you can go to the website at wombcenteredhealing.com. And this organization's focus is to bring together womb-centered healing practitioners for collaboration and also to support our further learning, as well as people seeking womb-centered healing support to receive the products, services, courses that the practitioners are offering there at the site. So check it out, wombcenteredhealing.com. And thanks again for joining us. If you enjoyed this podcast, please share about it with your friends and invite more to listen in. All right, so that's all for now. Thank you so much, Tiffany. Until next time.
All right.